Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name's Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome back Tony Hatch to our podcast. Tony's a longtime friend of Logistics Management Magazine and serves as principal of New York-based ABH Consulting. Tony has nearly three decades of experience in the freight, railroad, and transportation sectors, serving primarily as an analyst. In his role at ABH Consulting, he's been focused on the freight transportation segment, particularly surface transportation, and he's well known for his knowledge of the intermodal area where the various modes of freight transport converge. Prior to launching ABH Consulting, Tony was an analyst for Salomon Brothers, and then proceeding to Argus, Payne Weber, and then most recently at NatWest Markets prior to starting his independent analyst and consultancy in 1999. Tony is well known as a major industry voice and has spoken at many conferences over the years, including the annual Rail Trends Conference, which is hosted by Progressive Railroading, in which Tony serves as program coordinator. And the Rail Trends Conference was actually held virtually late last month. Hey, Tony, welcome back to our podcast.
Oh, Jeff, it's great to be here. Thanks.
Absolutely. It's a real pleasure to have you back. Well, Tony, we got a lot of ground to cover, and certainly this has been a year unlike any other. So I know we talked back in May when COVID was still, we're kind of adjusting to the, as much as I hate the term, the new normal, if you will. But why don't we take a look at the market, Tony, in terms of what's changed, what's different when we look at the state of the market, I guess going back to the onset of COVID back in mid-March to now, what are some of the more notable things as they relate to freight, rail, and intermodal?
So, Jeff, you're right. I mean, I don't even know if we can use that phrase we all dislike, the new normal, because, you know, what's been normal this year? It's been, you know, the decline seemed normal in rail volumes. And then that went through May, let's say, and then all of a sudden the incredible explosion of the recovery, almost recovery, to 2019 levels. Was that normal? What's normal this year? And I can also tell you that I'm speaking to you from my third quarantine of the year here in Lockdown City, New York. So I don't know what to say. I can tell you the current state of the market is recovery. A couple of points I want to make. We're talking about, you know, getting back to 2019 levels. You know, are we finally back? Where are we in intermodal, which is actually positive? Carload is broken into positive territory. Remember that last year was, you know, that's the good old days when you consider it from a pandemic. But it was a really tough year for railroads in general. It was not a great year, 2019. And it was roiled by trade wars, which greatly impacted and hurt intermodal movements. And so you have all sorts of oddities out there. It's hard to, you know, this is an apples to grapefruit to asparagus comparison level here. you know, so the new normal right now is we're clearly recovering. It looks like we've got, you know, some strengths, some tailwinds behind us, obviously in the intermodal, particularly domestic, but that includes transloaded boxes in LA, you know, the so-called need for speed that pushed a lot of restocking goods into the West Coast ports. Automotive has come back very sharply. It's still obviously down year. It was always expected to be down year over year, but it went from, you know, something to zero back to something again. Housing and forest products related stuff is doing well. And you really, aside from the intermodal recovery, which was so violent, so I call it a shark's tooth down and up like that. The real saving grace for the year for railroads was grain. You know, who would have thought agriculture would be the stabilizing influence in my career over, you know, for such a long time? It was always a great thing when it happened, but it was, you know, had weather impacts and politics and the dollar value and all these things going on. It was hardly stable, and yet people need to eat. And China needed to buy, and so we had a good, you know, we've had a good ag year, and it looks like we'll have a good ag year next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I know in the past you've said something along the lines that we are the world's breadbasket when referring to grain, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, we have through political means and dumb trade policies, and I'm not just the most recent ones, have helped create more basket makers out there. You know, we've helped recreate competitors in soybeans and whatnot in other markets. But, you know, when it goes well, it really goes well here. And when I say here, I'm thinking of all of North America. The Canadian railroads are reporting record November movements, for example. So there's struggling.
Okay.
You know, you did ask me about the state of the market, and all these things make it, I said, hard to make a comparison. What is the base year? You could say, okay, we are returned to growth, or we're still, whatever it is. The key thing to understand is one of the major things that the pandemic has done and is doing is accelerate pre-existing trends that were already there. The most obvious is e-commerce. People didn't want to go to stores. E-commerce was already growing by leaps and bounds, and then now it's by leaps and leaps. And the other thing is it seemed to have accelerated the decline of coal. Coal numbers have been the worst, even though there's no, I don't know, the direct correlation. Coal is on its own secular decline story in the United States. But the e-commerce factor has shown up in rail movements. One of the fastest growing components has been what Larry Gross calls the short trailer, right? The trailer and flat car that's stuffed with, you know, UPS and Walmart and other, and Amazon and other e-commerce goods. And it's also helped the container board part of the paper business is back, baby, as they like to say. Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Absolutely. No, of course. I thought we could touch on earnings for a second, because we just got through Q3 earnings. And I just looking back, I remember you, when we were talking about Q2 earnings, you said, well, who knows what it's really going to tell us, because things were just so generationally bad and sort of demand and volumes fell off a cliff during Q2. Q3 maybe could be viewed as perhaps a bit of a snapback or a return to more standard type market conditions, if you will. How, when you look at the Class 1 earnings for Q3, what were some of the themes that were uncovered there?
Well, the first and biggest theme is while things are clearly a lot better, but looking at third quarter, there's still no visibility. None of the railroads are really willing to say where we were, how long this would last, how much of the restocking issue is a one-time restocking versus a return to an intermodal, you know, secular growth rate above that of GDP, for example. Earnings in the first half of the year beat expectations solidly. In the third quarter, all of a sudden, you saw earnings come in sort of at or slightly below expectations. And part of that is just expectations. It isn't the railroad's fault. They actually had a pretty tremendous third quarter, but expectations were risen a little high. That's very short-term thinking, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. But I do want to give the railroad some credit. You know, they are more flexible than they're given credit for, but not usually, you know, within a quarter, right? If there's some new piece of business, they need to build some capacity or shift some assets. If you look at it from April till July, you were in two different directions with this, you know, like a complete airplane dive, right? That when the production stopped, and then the demand for any product stopped, and the economy almost shut down. The auto industry did absolutely shut down, right? So all of a sudden in the late spring, early summer, you pull out of the dive and you go straight back up. And the question is, you know, whether you go up above the level you started the dive from, and what does that mean? Because I've told you about 2019. But the fact that they had to manage their way down in the quickest downturn, you know, probably since the Great Depression, you know, and then manage their way back up in the most violent upturn. You know, railroads love to have things grow 3 to 5 to 7%. That would be their heaven. You know, steady growth. I can add locomotives when I need to. I can, you know, longer trains than I can add some side, you know. But violent changes are very hard to manage. And the fact is they did that, right? While many of them even improved their operating ratio, not to overemphasize that one ratio, but with, you know, cash flows at flat or up, I mean, they handled these two violent moves, either one of which would have been the story of the year, right? And they did this while their own workforce had to go through COVID issues. You know, they're much safer than most industries, but they have families, that, you know, and children in school and all the other things that we're going through. So, you know, I think they showed that railroads are a lot better shape financially and operationally than maybe we had thought. And also we're all thankful that those railroads that did this, you know, violent revolution of precision scheduled railroading, PSR, luckily they did this in 2017, 2018, and 2019. So that they were much more prepared. You know, they didn't do it for a pandemic, but if they were doing it in the middle of a pandemic, it could have been, you know, a real problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great segue, your reference to PSR, because I was just going to ask you about current service conditions, current service levels. At the RailTrends virtual conference, there was a lot of talk by the Class 1 executives about how PSR is making an impact, and it'd be great to hear your take on that.
So I think service levels in the third quarter were below year earlier levels because of the violence of the third quarter showed both directions of those moves. But by the end of the quarter, they were running back at flatter up in terms of velocity, dwell, on-time performance. And so I think in the fourth quarter, they're back up. Are there areas of congestion? We certainly heard about L.A., Long Beach. You know, this is a hard thing to do. They're getting it done. I don't think they're the biggest problem in the supply chain of international containers. And I think it's probably mostly behind us by now. Also, it's interesting to look at the difference between the two big Western carriers there. One of them had more problems than the other and could be partially due to capital spending in the past. As you know, I'm a big believer that smart capital spending has huge payoffs in service, in efficiency, in safety, sure, and in returns. Service conditions went through all of the gyrations of everything else. And, you know, they have trouble getting people into work sometimes and all of that. But right now they're running back on their trend. PSR clearly helped them. PSR 1.0, which is a cost-cutting, you know, operationally focused, inwardly focused thing. And I think we're getting to the point where that's getting behind us. And if you look to the Canadians,
yeah,
PSR 2.0 is a big focus on growth. And as Kansas City Southern says, service begets growth. So I think you're seeing, you know, this transition. There's so many things to look at right now. But one of them is the railroads have gotten beyond, I just need to do this with fewer people and sweat the assets more to, okay, now that I've created a low-cost structure, how do I, you know, have reliable, consistent service?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I wanted to shift gears to the incoming Biden administration, just in terms of what could be sort of the impact of a new president on freight rail and intermodal. I know you had touched upon trade policy earlier as it relates to intermodal. So if you want to start with that, that's fine. We could talk about surface transportation reauthorization as well,
so
whatever you like.
The Biden, I'm taking off my citizen hat. Many people who know me know where I stand on that. But as a rail and intermodal analyst, any administration change is going to be a positive. The trade policy was so upsetting, and I mean that in a sort of literal sense, to grow, to foreign direct investment, to grow plants in Mexico or other places, to expand your business requires a level of surety, of stability, and we were anything but that, including the two-year process to essentially get back to where we started from a railroad perspective on NAFTA. Now it's UMCA. So the re-engagement with our allies, which include our two NAFTA partners, I think a more sensible trade policy is going to be a huge, you know, plus. Will the China tariffs, of which there are $370 billion, come off immediately? I don't know. We're waiting to hear who gets named in the trade positions. It's also worth pointing out, as was pointed out at RailTrends, that it takes a while, and unfortunately, although we all think it's the be-all and end-all, and it is, transportation is rarely the first priority on any incoming administration. And the last time it took, you know, up to a year to get all the people in place at DOT, at FRA, we hopefully will get all five people in at the STB. But so it's going to take a while for this policy to go. Now, this is mostly a very positive thing for railroads. I think railroad leadership in their heart of hearts, voted blue this year. I do think that there are some risks. And one of them is the Democratic Congress in the past has imposed, for example, two-man crews as a mandatory thing for railroads. And that would be a big negative, as we all strive towards autonomy on the highway and on the railway. The railway has the technical ability to get there almost now, and yet is being held back, like all things have changed, by regulatory issues. For the government to get involved in mandating two-man crews when they've already mandated PTC, positive train control, a safety overlay, is counterintuitive, except that we know the governments are often counterintuitive. It's clearly political. Those people, certainly both, don't need to be on most of these locomotives. But more importantly, that's a matter of historically a precedent for 100 plus years of labor negotiations, not of mandated So that is an issue to worry about. Biden hasn't commented on it, but the Congress in the previous reauthorization bill put this in. That is a, you know, simply can't pass. You can't be funding driverless trucks while mandating two people to go on when technology within a few years will render both their jobs useless. There are other specific things. In the past, if the Democratic senators out of the state of Washington have fought hard for an appeal of the harbor maintenance tax, that could impact trade flows for intermodal. It has been cited as one of the major reasons why the British Columbia ports have taken so much share from the PNW and from Northern California. I believe there's more to it than that, such as extremely efficient rail service from Prince Rupert. But, you know, that's another thing to look at if you're an intermodal shipper.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And we talked a minute before about how there's a lot of things, for example, from Walmart, from Amazon and UPS, you know, rolling on the rails. And that just got me thinking about peak season. Obviously, things are going full guns right now as it relates to West Coast imports. We saw some tremendous numbers, especially the last 3 months out of the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, and everyone shopping from home. Nobody's really going to malls to buy gifts, etc. What is your take on peak season as it relates to the intermodal market?
So the intermodal players that I've talked to expect, you know, good times to last into the first quarter, and then they have no crystal ball at all. So what we'll have to unpack maybe later is how much of this was restocking, as I've talked about, how much of this was a perhaps temporary shift of consumer spending from services to goods, as you can't go to amusement parks and ball games, which obviously, you know, the hockey matches we miss. So I don't know the answer. There's several things going on. There's a tight truck market. There's, you know, so there's market share opportunities as railroad services improve. There is restocking. There is this shift in how money is spent. There, you know, the pandemic impact. Clearly, we're going to have a very strong and extended peak. We're already in it. But what does this mean for next year and the years after is hard for me to say right now. I am encouraged by intermodal's comeback. I hope they provide enough capacity this time, unlike in 2018, that they can be stickier, more of this on the domestic container side than just trailers on flat cars. I'm encouraged by the rail's comeback. The question is, how much do they keep? We'll be trying to unpack all those roiling, you know, one-time and cyclical events going on.
Okay, interesting. That's great. And before we sign off, I had one last question. It just had to do with a theme that was pretty prevalent at Rail Trends, having to do with ESG or environmental and social governance on behalf of railroads. And it seems like it's both an established and an emerging trend or theme within the freight railroad sector. And I was just wondering what you thought sort of about the people that were talking about it, their takes on it.
So there was a whole presentation by one railroad, Union Pacific, was really focused on ESG or sustainable investing. In the third quarter, you know, every railroad had one of their webcast slides dedicated to it. You know, one out of 10 or 12 is pretty high, you know, if you think about it. Whereas in the past, they almost never did. Now, railroads focused on their environmental advantages. Remember, by being so fuel efficient, they're also incredibly emissions efficient. Right. So while they do carry coal on the one hand, you know, less of it every day, you know, their ability to move, you know, if you're a shipper who wants to lower your carbon footprint, increasing your rail percentage is something that has been talked about for a while. I truly tend to think of that as often a rich person's issue. Like if you have a lot of money, you start to think about social causes. And when you don't, it's purely, you know, as somebody, I think Jim Foote of CSX said, you know, ESG is important, but, you know, I got to offer good service and a good price. Then we talk ESG. But from the investment point of view, this trend has been going on for, you know, the whole century, but it gets bigger every year. That's why you're seeing it show up on the rail conversation place. You're seeing, you know, major owners of the railroads, the largest percentage owner of Canadian National held a meeting during Rail Trends, meaning, you know, like during those days. They had a meeting with Canadian National going over their governance things and going over, you know, going through a checklist that was important to them. And as they were an owner of their, you know, substantial number of shares, CN management met with them. And that gives you some idea that this is important. It's a good thing to do anyway. It helps in your hiring and retaining good people. You know, there is a history of railroads. Railroads have been like planting trees and doing offsets for years and pushing this, and have actually a very good relationship with big environmental lobbies in D.C. and in Ottawa and Mexico City. You know, they're not always on the same side of every issue, but they're not antagonistic. If you saw a train and looked at it as a dirty element, a big pulsing engine, but if you think about all the stuff that's pulling behind it, it's pretty green. So ESG is clearly, you know, I got that too, Jeff. And it was the, you know, the word or the phrase or the three letters of the day at RailTrends and for the third quarter results that were, you know, a few weeks before. You know, it's here to stay. It is sustainable investing is actually of late proven to be, you know, to beat most, you know, market indices. So it's, you know, it's a way all these people may have good hearts, but they also have, you know, big wallets. And that means they have power and they want to see those wallets grow. And if you can grow it in a sustainable way, that's perfect.
Yeah, no, well put. Well, listen, Tony, this brings us to the end of our time for today's podcast. So on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I want to say thanks for joining us again. It's been terrific.
Jeff, anytime. I always enjoy talking to you and I love to talk about these issues.
Yeah, great. That's terrific to hear. And for those of you listening that are on Twitter, please go ahead and give Tony a follow. It's simply at ABHatch18. And also, please give us a follow, Logistics Management, that is, at LogisticsMGMT. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Have a great day.